Before I left overseas, I started a lesson on figures of speech. And I'm sure most of you probably don't remember much about it, other than we did talk about it. But I'd like to continue that lesson and talk about it in another aspect of it. We, just as a quick review, figures of speech, we're really looking at it and trying to make sure that we understand how to recognize when the Bible is using figures of speech. It's not that we don't do it all the time in our own communications. When we talk to people, when we write to people, we do it constantly. We just don't often think about it because it's so natural to us. Yet in the scriptures, we want to make sure we understand when a figure of speech is being used because, people twist it. Sometimes they'll claim there's a figure of speech when there really isn't one. For instance, I just heard yet another one where people were basically claiming, Adam was just a representation of the beginning of the mankind and that it was really not that way. Well, that's not the way the Bible presents it. It's not written as a figure of speech. Other things that are figures of speech, sometimes people take very literally. Another example I ran across just recently. Somebody was having problems with a relative because they had a dragon on their shirt. And, Satan's a dragon. So you shouldn't wear dragons. And it's taking something as a figure of speech and then applying a very literal meaning to it. So we got to be careful how we do that. Now, we talked about some figures of speech, and one of the basic ways to recognize a figure of speech, especially, is if you take it literally and take exactly what it says. Not because you don't like what it says, but because if you took it literally, it wouldn't make sense. Then most likely there's a figure of speech. And we got to be careful in that when we say, it doesn't make sense, if we don't want to put our own opinion on it and say, I don't like that answer, therefore, it doesn't make sense. But if it really doesn't make sense, then we look at it and say there's a figure of speech going on. And we also noted that there's about a classification. The Greeks came up with a classification of figures of speech, and they have 200 different types. We're not going to go through all 200 of them. But they're broken down to three basic categories. There are figures of speech where we leave something out. We drop something in some way, leaving out words that should be there or something else, and it gives extra emphasis. Another way we have a figure of speech we talked about is that we add something to it. Either we add words that are not necessary into it, or duplicating words or repeating words. Or we can also add meaning. And one of the most common ones we talked about right towards the end was hyperbole. That's when people say something that sounds just like Jesus saying, basically to pluck out an eye. Well, that's an extreme. And that's a figure of speech to make a point. And that's an addition of emphasis there. But what we're going to do today, I didn't press the button twice, so hopefully it comes on. What we're going to look at today are figures of speech where we change the meaning of words. So we had ones where we took away meaning. We had ones where we added meaning. Now we're going to look at ones where we change the meaning of words. Metonymy is probably the most common one, or one that a lot of people have an easy time understanding. It's when you take one noun and you replace it with something else. Probably the easiest common everyday way of talking about a metonymy is, you put the kettle on to boil. Well, you don't boil kettles. You boil the waters in the kettle. So one thing is replacing another. Okay, in Proverbs chapter 10, Proverbs chapter 10 and in verse 20. It says, the tongue of righteousness is as choice silver, The heart of the wicked is worth little. But we have a substitution. We're replacing one set of words for another. When you read that, we don't often think about, we're not, when he says the tongue, he's not talking about the literal item that's within your mouth. He's talking about the words that come out of a person's mouth. So the tongue is being substituted for words. Heart is then being substituted for the thoughts or the desires of the person. Like I said, we talk about this all the time. We understand it, but we need to recognize it. Similar in Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 21. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Well, most of us keep our hearts inside our body. So we recognize this, wait a minute, this is not literally what he's talking about. There's a thing, and we again have a metony. Where in this particular case, then, the heart is for the thoughts or our desires. Where we want to be, that's where our heart, our desires are. At the same place. Another type of change, I don't know if I can pronounce that word well enough, is where you change one idea for another. Instead, one is where you change words, change nouns. But here we change whole ideas. Let's go over to Mark chapter 16. Mark chapter 16 and verse 15. It says, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. Now, if you think about it and take it literally, does that mean we go out and preach to the trees? Have you preached to your horse recently? Or your dog or your cat? That's not what he's talking about when he says preach to all creation. Creation is being a substitution for all of mankind. In Philippians chapter 3, Philippians chapter 3 and verse 19, it says, whose end is destruction, whose God is their appetite, whose glory is in their shame, who set their minds on earthly things. Now, my particular translation uses the word appetite, but the literal word there is stomach. That's in the Greek. And the stomach is then being used as a substitution for a person's desires. What you want, your fleshly desires, your personal desires. So it becomes what I want. I get hungry, so your stomach rumbles. So it then becomes extended to all desires. Another one. Again, I should look up and practice all these crazy Greek words. But you have it on the screen anyway. But it is a one where we use two words to express one idea. So we use two words and change it to express one idea. In 1 Timothy chapter 1, this is one that, you know, when I first started reading through this, I never really thought of this as being a figure of speech. But 1 Timothy 1 verse 17. It says, now to the King eternal, immortal, invisible, the only God, be honor and glory forever and ever. Amen. The phrase honor and glory. Well, you could just say glorious honor. But we're... by putting those two words, it becomes a figure of speech, and that's what we're having here. Two words representing one idea. Okay, so we've got two different words being used, but it's one idea, glorious honor, that's actually being expressed. Another one similar to that is in Luke chapter 1. Luke chapter 1 and in verse 17. Luke 1 verse 17, It said, it is he who will go as a forerunner before him in spirit and power of Elijah to turn back the hearts of the fathers back to the children and the disobedient to the attitude of the righteous, so that as to make a ready people prepared for the Lord. Where he says there, spirit and power. Well, he could have just said powerful spirit. It's two words again being used to express one idea. Another one that comes up is called a name change. An example of this is in Acts 3 and verse 14. Acts chapter 3, verse 14 says, but you disown the holy and righteous one and ask for a murderer to be granted to you. Well, when we read it, it says the holy and righteous one. We know that that phrase means Jesus. Why didn't he just say Jesus? Well, he's emphasizing who Jesus is. He's holy. He's righteous. And so we changed his name to the holy and righteous one to make a point, as well as in letting people know who Jesus really is. Another one's euphemisms. That one I can't say. Those refer to when you use nice words for something that's unpleasant, that you'd rather not directly state. For instance, in Genesis chapter 15, is one that we actually do quite often. Genesis chapter 15 and in verse 15. It says, as for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. What does it mean, go to your fathers? Well, it means that you're dying. It's a euphemism. Okay. We know he's talking about death because he talks about being buried right after it. But that phrase is a euphemism, a nicer way to say that you're going to die. And we do that all the time. We don't like to sometimes to think about death, so we put it in nicer terms. We substitute something that's a little bit easier to understand. Or like in John chapter 11, and in verse 11, we're talking about these things this morning. John 11, verse 11. He said to them after that he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go so that I may wake him out of sleep. Jesus was saying he had died. We refer to it as sleep because we want to emphasize the fact that when a person dies, they will be resurrected. That it's not permanent. But it's a lot easier to talk about somebody having gone to sleep than to say that they actually had died. Now, another interesting one where we change is everything else we've been changing words or changing ideas, replacing one with another. Sometimes we can also change the order of words. Put them in an unusual order. You need an example of that. Think of that Star Wars character, Yoda, who seemed to reverse his words all the time. It makes it stick out. Even though you understand what he's saying, it's in the wrong order. Take a look at John 6, verse 60. Now, most of your translations, and this is one of the problems, most of the translations fix the order. Okay, so this one doesn't translate very well because most of the translations will adjust the order for you. But in John 6 and in verse 60, It says, therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, says, this is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it? What it literally says is, hard is this word. They changed it to say difficult statement, which is what it means. But what the disciples actually said is, hard is this word. Or another one is in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 16. And again, your translations, I would almost guarantee you, have fixed this and reordered it. So you lose what actually is in the Greek. But in 1 Timothy 3, verse 16, it says, But by common confession, great is the mystery of godliness. He who has revealed in the flesh, has vindicated in the spirit, seen by angels, proclaimed among the nations, believed on in the world, taken up in glory. Where it says, where mine says, great is the mystery of godliness, it literally says, great is of godliness the mystery. Now that's, you know, putting that word in the other order, it takes you aback. The reason for doing it is to cause you to pause, because it's not the way you would normally say it. So you got to stop and you got to think about it for a moment. And it helps bring across the ideas and emphasize something. Now, another one we can do, and we're used to these quite often, is where we apply words differently than we normally would. One of them is a simile. We learned this probably back in grade school, not high school, where we make a comparison by resemblance. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, we're going to look at verse 22 and 25. It says, wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. It's not saying your husbands are the Lord. Is making a comparison between how we treat the Lord and how we treat our husband. In verse 25, it says, husbands, love your wife, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. The word as in English is our signal that we have a simile. We have a comparison going on. We're comparing two things together to draw a conclusion that's not directly stated. A metaphor is where one thing represents another. And typically, a metaphor is noted when the word is used instead of as. Take a look at Psalms 23. Psalm 23 and verse 1. Most of us can quote this, but I'm going to read it. I'll get my Bible to flip over there fast enough. Psalm 23 and verse 1 says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Is to say that this is a metaphor. We're not talking about the Lord literally being a shepherd out in the field taking care of sheep. We're saying there's a comparison being drawn between how the Lord treats us and how a shepherd treats the sheep. And that is in the signal that says that it's taking place. Another one that we should look at is Matthew 26, verse 26. This is one where the Roman Catholic Church take literally when it should be done and understood figuratively. In Matthew 26, during the setting up of the Lord's Supper, 26 verse 26 says, when while they were eating, Jesus took some bread, and after blessing, he broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat, this is my body. Now, the Roman Catholics take that very literally and say, okay, it is literally his body. But if you think about it for a moment, it can't be. Jesus alive, sitting there right with them, and the bread he's holding in his hand can't be his body. It's a metaphor. The word is the signal for it. He's saying that the bread is like his body. There's a comparison going on between the two. One represents the other. Now, another one that we can have is where one thing implied resembles another thing. We don't quite come out directly and state it as clearly as with a simile or a metaphor. Take a look at Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, verse 6. It says, "Do not give what is holy to dogs, and do not throw your pearls before swine, or they will trample them under their feet and turn and tear you to pieces." Now, is Jesus actually talking about dogs and pigs? Okay. Certain types of people act like dogs. Certain types of people act like pigs. Now, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say his people. But the way it's worded, we understand. He's not talking literally about dogs and pigs. He's talking about certain types of people that we're not to cast what is valuable to us before these type of people. Or take a look at Mark chapter 1 and verse 17. "And Jesus said to them, 'Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men.'" Well, we don't spread the gospel with a fishing pole or cast a net out. We might get more people if we cast the nets out. But that's not what he's talking about here. There's a comparison. People are being compared to like a fisherman fishing for fish. But it's not a direct comparison. The other side is not stated, it's implied. Another interesting one where we change is where something's stated and it actually has a double meaning where both of them are true. Take a look at Acts chapter 17. These are almost like puns. Acts chapter 17 and verse 22. And again, your translation might blur this particular distinction. "So Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, 'Men of Athens, I observe that you are very religious in all respects.'" That phrase, "I observe that you're very religious." Well, that could mean someone who's very devoted to a different type of religion. It also can mean somebody who's very superstitious. And actually, Paul means both. They are both very religious in their idol worship, and they're very superstitious. And so there's two meanings being said at the same time. It just depends on whether you're aware of both meanings or not. A similar type of thing is irony, where you're saying something that means the opposite of what you actually said. Teenagers love this. They get really caught up in this when they start realizing it exists. In Judges chapter 10, Judges chapter 10 and verse 14. It says, "Go and cry out to the gods which you have chosen. Let them deliver you in your time of distress." This is God talking. Is God actually encouraging the Israelites to go worship idols? Well, if he did, it would be contradictory to what he's very plainly stated many times. What he's speaking is an irony. This is what they want to do, and God's saying, Go try it and see if it actually works. Not that God thinks it's going to work. He's speaking in irony. He's basically saying the opposite of what he wants them to understand. Another example of this is in Job chapter 12. Job 12 and verse 2. We'll start with verse 1. Then Job responded, "Truly then, you are the people, and with you the wisdom will die." Now, if you take it literally, you know, he's saying you're really smart. You take the rest of what Job says, and he's saying you're not that smart. He's speaking in irony. He's, in fact, he's stretching it a little bit too. Another one that's sometimes fun is oxymorons. Those are wise sayings that seem to be foolish. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 10. Isaiah 58 verse 10, it says, "And if you give yourselves to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will rise in darkness and your gloom will become like midday." And at first you're saying, huh? But if you think about it for a little bit, it makes sense. At first it just sounds kind of jumbled. We're so used to reading this type of passage that we look at it and say, of course it says it. But study this with somebody who is not familiar with the Bible, and they'll very quickly say, will you explain this to me? Because there's so many words that are being used that are not being used in a normal way. Another example is in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 25. First Corinthians chapter 1, and in verse 25, "Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men." And again, when you first read it, it sounds odd. We don't normally talk about God being foolish. We don't talk about God being weak. But then when you start thinking about it, it makes sense. The least capable God is, and God's very capable, is far superior to anything that we do. And one more that we're going to go to tonight is personification. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, and in verse 15, it says that the foot says, "Because I am not a hand, I am not a part of the body," is not for that reason any less a part of the body. And if the ear says, "Because I am not an eye, I am not a part of the body," is not for this reason any less a part of the body. Well, I don't know about you, but my foot hasn't talked recently. It might pain me once in a while, but it doesn't communicate in words. This is called personification. You're treating something as inanimate as if it was a person. And again, it's to make a point. It's to make something emphasized to get us to think. See, that's another reason for figures of speech. Figures of speech are there. We take note of it when something is said that's really not possible. But the real reason they're there is to bring us and draw us into thinking about what's being said. If everything was just plain, I don't know. I used to work in a computer field. And if you read the manuals, they're not light reading. They're very plain. They say everything exactly what they mean to say. And they're boring. Most of the things that we like to read if you actually pay attention to it, uses heavy figures of speech because it makes you think. It adds extra interest to what's being said. And we find that more entertaining. God's holding our attention to what he's saying by using figures of speech. And we just need to be able to recognize them and know when they are there so that we don't make wrong applications. Not recognizing when it's being used or saying it's being used when it really isn't. We need to be careful about those type of things. So that's, again, just a few more like it. I have several other ones I want to go through in a little more detail, but I haven't written anything up yet. But probably maybe once a month or so, I might, again, go through a couple of these topics just to help us in understanding our scriptures a little bit better. This is not a lesson that was designed to draw people into becoming a child of God. But the point is that our Bibles are not difficult to understand. We can grasp what God is trying to get across because he's using speech just the way we do. But if there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of your brother on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song of Selected.